Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Cheyenne Harris. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Cheyenne Renee Harris was born on February 17, 1997, and lived in the state of Iowa. She became romantically involved with a man named Zachary Paul Keene. The couple lived in apartment number 7 in a building at 304 West Wilson Drive in Alta Vista. This is a very small town in northeast Iowa. Only 227 people live there. Cheyenne and Zachary were both big fans of methamphetamine and frequently used the drug. In 2014, Cheyenne had a daughter named Nala Keene. On May 1, 2017, Cheyenne had a son named Sterling Daniel Keene. The childbirth caught Cheyenne off guard. She made it sound as if she did not know she was pregnant. Sterling was born in a bathroom in a residence where Cheyenne was attending a party. He tested positive for methamphetamine. To earn a living, Zachary had a job as a truck driver, which paid him $45,000 a year. It's not clear what Cheyenne did for work, but she was not working by 2017. Before moving to the timeline of the crime, let's hear a word from today's sponsor, FlexiSpot. Many old chairs are simply uncomfortable, unreliable, and leave a person sore after hours of sitting. Say goodbye to that misery and welcome a new era of comfort with the FlexiSpot C7 Max. This chair is loaded with features designed to make your sitting experience truly exceptional. For example, an adjustable headrest, which cradles the neck perfectly, an adjustable backrest to support your spine in any position, an impressive ability to recline, letting you stretch out and relax whenever you need, lumbar support, suitable for 12 hours of sitting comfortably, adjustable seat depth, armrest that can be set to many different positions to keep shoulders relaxed, a clever fold-out footrest, and a latex seat cushion with memory foam. The FlexiSpot C7 Max is cost-effective, comes with a 30-day return policy, and a 10-year warranty. Black Friday is on at FlexiSpot from November 27 to December 1. Enjoy up to 60% off site-wide and get an extra $30 off the C7 Max with code Dr. Todd. The biggest savings of the year? Grab yours now. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On August 30, 2017, at 12:57 p.m., Zachary Keene called 911 and said, "We need an ambulance sent out." He went on to say that around 9 a.m., his girlfriend went to feed their son. At 11 or 11:30 a.m., she went back to check on him, and he was gone. The operator asked, "Gone meaning?" Zachary responded, "He died." During the call, he suggested a possible cause of death, saying, "I don't know if it was sudden death syndrome or what." I believe he was referring to sudden infant death syndrome. Here's what the police found during the course of their investigation. Sterling Keene was dead in a dark bedroom in the apartment. The bedroom was described as very hot. 8 hours later, when the temperature was measured, it was 81 degrees Fahrenheit. Sterling was seated in a powered swing facing a wall. His diaper was infested with maggots. It appeared as though he had been sitting in the same diaper for 10 to 14 days. Sterling had been dead for about 12 to 24 hours, which meant he suffered for a long time, leading up to his death. His body weight was 6.94 pounds, only slightly heavier than his weight at birth. Sterling should have weighed 11 pounds by this time. His body was 14 inches long. Sterling was under the 5th percentile in size and weight for his age. An autopsy revealed that Sterling died from malnutrition, dehydration, and an E. coli infection. This infection was caused by sitting in his own feces and urine for several days. The official cause of death was denial of critical care. The manner of death was homicide. Both Cheyenne and Zachary were arrested and charged with first-degree murder and child endangerment resulting in death. Zachary went on trial first in late October 2018. He argued that taking care of Sterling was Cheyenne's job. They agreed that he would generally not be responsible for changing his diapers or feeding him. Zachary claimed that he had been working outside the home 70 to 80 hours a week, so he wasn't around too much. He was unaware that Cheyenne had discontinued care of Sterling and shocked by the death. If Zachary had been aware of what was going on, he would have changed Sterling and fed him. The prosecution presented evidence that Zachary was not working as many hours a week as he claimed. As far as Zachary's claim that he didn't know that Cheyenne had discontinued care, this was very difficult to believe. The apartment the family lived in was very small, and the smell coming from Sterling was unbearable. Initially, Zachary said that he heard Sterling cry at 6 a.m. on August 30. This is impossible because Sterling was dead prior to 6 a.m. Later, Zachary changed his story and said he must have dreamed about hearing Sterling at that time. He said that he saw Sterling alive for the last time on August 28. On November 6, 2018, Zachary was found guilty of both charges. His sentence was life in prison without the possibility of parole. In early 2019, it was Cheyenne's turn to face trial. On February 6 of that year, she was convicted of the same charges as Zachary, first-degree murder and child endangerment resulting in death. On April 30, 2019, Cheyenne received life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now moving to my analysis. Cheyenne Harris maintained her innocence as far as the first-degree murder charge. Her defense admitted that she was guilty of endangerment. The state, of course, argued that she was guilty of first-degree murder as well. This brings me to the question, was Cheyenne guilty of first-degree murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that she was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Cheyenne was responsible for caring for Sterling. This was her moral and legal obligation. She was not attentive to Sterling and complained that he would fuss all the time. Friends who came over to the apartment did not even know Sterling existed. In the 2 weeks or so leading up to Sterling's death, he was left in a swing facing a wall in a very hot bedroom with the door closed. During this time, Cheyenne was using methamphetamine. However, she managed to care for herself and for her daughter, Nala. Cheyenne had plenty of food and other supplies needed to care for Sterling. It wasn't a matter of not having the resources. In order to convict Cheyenne of first-degree murder, the state needed to prove that she acted with malice aforethought. That is, she intended to kill or acted with an extreme disregard for life. It's possible that Cheyenne did not intend to kill Sterling. However, one can make a good argument that she acted with an extreme disregard for life. Moving to the exculpatory factors, the defense admitted that Cheyenne was guilty of endangerment. They only argued against the charge of first-degree murder, saying that she had been overcharged. This was based on the assertion that Cheyenne's homicidal behavior was not consistent with malice aforethought, which is a required element of first-degree murder. The defense presented evidence showing that Cheyenne had substance use disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and major depressive disorder, hoping the jury would regard her mental health history as a mitigating factor. The defense argument was not really cohesive. It didn't quite make sense. To be fair, the defense didn't have much to work with. All they could do was say their client was guilty of an extremely serious crime, but not guilty of another slightly worse, extremely serious crime. The horrible way that Sterling was murdered did not leave the defense in a good position to sell any idea framing Cheyenne as less culpable. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Cheyenne was guilty of first-degree murder? Yes, in my opinion, she was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. If she could have somehow been tried 1,000 times, every jury would have convicted her. I think the same thing is true for Zachary. There is just about zero doubt of his guilt. He had no chance of avoiding a conviction either. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Cheyenne and Zachary were addicted to methamphetamine. The drug was the most important thing in their life. Zachary made enough money as a truck driver so they could afford to use the drug frequently. Cheyenne never really became attached to her son Sterling. I wonder if she even thought of him as a human being. When she became high on methamphetamine, she took care of her daughter, but left Sterling alone in a room to die in a horrible manner, a fate that was unbelievably painful and terrifying. His tragic end was completely and easily avoidable, yet neither Cheyenne nor Zachary would lift a finger to prevent his death. Maybe Cheyenne was too impaired to even realize that Sterling was in the room. Perhaps she didn't care that he would die, or maybe she wanted to kill him due to resenting him or some other motive. It's not really clear what she was thinking. No rational person would behave in that manner. Regardless of her motive, Cheyenne committed a heinous crime and was destined to spend the rest of her life in prison. As far as Zachary, he may have believed that Cheyenne really was 100% responsible for Sterling, and caring for his son simply wasn't his problem. This tragedy was probably caused by a combination of substance use and destructive personality traits like self-centeredness, a sense of entitlement, sensation-seeking, impulsivity, and recklessness. Now moving to my final thoughts. After Cheyenne was sent to prison, she participated in a documentary about women who received a life sentence. Not surprisingly, she is not having fun in prison. Other inmates have harassed her due to the horrific nature of her offense. Criminals like Cheyenne cause people to be disgusted. Other inmates are not exempt from this feeling, even though many of them have committed horrible crimes as well. Cheyenne said, "I don't think I really have very many friends right now." To explain why she committed murder, Cheyenne indicated that it never would have happened if she had not been on methamphetamine. After all this time, she is still blaming the drug for her own behavior, which only reinforces the importance of her continued incarceration. The penalty given to Cheyenne and Zachary is completely appropriate. The actions of the couple went far beyond ordinary neglect. Sterling's death was the result of prolonged conscious abandonment in conditions that no child should ever endure. This was not a momentary lapse in judgment, rather a sustained pattern of willful indifference, a level of cruelty that one might observe between the most sadistic of sworn enemies, not between parents and a child. Those are my thoughts on the case of Cheyenne Harris. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.